Akatra Foundation presents the Akatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really getting into the life and, I guess, the mind of an American icon, Gloria Steinem. We're using her 2015 memoir, My Life on the Road, as our guide.
Yeah, and it's such a fascinating book because it's not just about, you know, the women's movement in the abstract.
Right. It's really this deep look at how movement itself, like actual physical travel, connecting with people constantly, and maybe most importantly, this idea of deep listening, how all that shaped her.
Exactly. It shaped her as an activist, a journalist.
Yeah.
I mean, she really was one of the great travelers of our time, wasn't she?
Totally. And for Steinem, home wasn't really a place on a map. It was the road itself, you know, collecting stories that literally fueled a global revolution.
And what's so illuminating about this book, her approach here, is how it kind of flips the script on autobiography. It's not like point A to point B chronologically.
No, not at all.
It's more like these interconnected moments showing how her identity, her activism, it was all forged out there, on the road.
In community centers, universities.
Living rooms, yeah.
Yeah.
And the engine driving it, as you said, was that real human connection, often through what she calls the talking circle.
Ah, yes, the talking circle.
She really believed, passionately, that lasting change doesn't come from, you know, some expert on a stage. It bubbles up from people sharing their truths intimately.
And that's what we're going to unpack today, right? How she developed this whole way of working through just listening, a lifetime of it.
Exactly. Her methodology.
Okay, so let's start this deep dive. Her life on the road. It actually started when she was a kid, literally living in a house trailer.
Yeah, it wasn't a metaphor back then.
No. Her father, Leo Steinem, he sounds like quite a character. Charming, always moving, an antique dealer.
Right, and he gave her this this optimism, didn't he? Love for just talking to strangers, this idea that travel was just normal, the natural state.
But then there's the contrast with her mother, Ruth, a former journalist, brilliant, but her ambitions kind of got sacrificed.
Mm-hmm. Sacrificed for marriage, for motherhood. And she struggled a lot with anxiety, depression.
And Gloria, at only 11, became her main caregiver, which is, wow.
It's intense. And that experience, that sort of painful rootedness, being isolated while caring for this woman whose potential felt trapped, it was such a stark contrast to her father's freedom.
So that duality became foundational.
Absolutely foundational. It wasn't just personal sadness. It was her first real, visceral look at the systemic injustice women face, those unlived lives, as she put it, that planted the seeds for everything else.
That makes so much sense. So education was her way out, in a sense. Smith College, an intellectual awakening.
Yes, but then came a really pivotal phase after college, that fellowship in India. 2 years, late 1950s. It was meant to be for study, but...
But it became something much more profound, right?
Oh, completely. It was her crucible. She wasn't just in libraries. She was out there walking with Gandhi's disciples in the Sarvodaya movement, village to village.
Whoa.
And that's where she truly saw the talking circle in action. You know, picture people, often women, sitting together, just speaking their truth, listening without interrupting. Everyone's voice valued equally.
A space to turn shame into power.
Exactly. Individual shame into collective power. And that just fundamentally shaped her whole approach to activism. She learned, really learned, that change doesn't come from bringing answers to people.
It comes from listening to them.
Right. Listening to the people living the problems, trusting their wisdom to find the solutions. That became her blueprint, you know, bottom-up change.
What an incredible foundation. So she comes back to the U.S., late 50s, ready for journalism in New York, but it wasn't easy.
No, she hit that wall of sexism pretty hard. Always getting assigned the soft topics, the women's interest stuff.
Which must have been incredibly frustrating. And that led to that famous undercover piece in 63.
Yes. A bunny's tale. Going undercover as a waitress at the New York Playboy Club.
It made her famous, but...
But it was a double-edged sword, wasn't it? It exposed the exploitation, which was huge, but it also kind of typecast her as this glamour girl.
Making it harder to be seen as the serious political journalist she wanted to be.
Exactly. So she had the skills, the visibility, but she needed to bridge that gap to full-on activism. How did that happen? How did she shed that label?
Well, you mentioned pivotal moments. One huge one seems to be the abortion speak-out in 1969.
Right. Organized by the Red Stockings, a really radical feminist group. Their whole thing was consciousness-raising, getting women to share personal stories. So this speak-out was focused on illegal abortions.
And Gloria went Initially, maybe as a journalist, but it hit differently.
It hit personally. She heard these harrowing stories and it just clicked. That's the word she uses.
Her own past illegal abortion, something she'd carried with shame, wasn't just her secret.
It was part of a larger political reality, a systemic issue.
Yeah.
And realizing that just broke down the wall between her personal life and her political convictions.
Propelling her into leadership for reproductive rights.
Absolutely. And teaching her firsthand the immense power of breaking silence. Sharing stories isn't just therapeutic, it's politically potent.
Turning pain into collective strength.
Precisely. And after that, she really saw how the mainstream media was getting the whole feminist movement wrong. Mocking it. Trivializing it.
So a new platform was needed, which leads us to Ms. Magazine, 1972.
Another huge turning point. Co-founding MISIX with Dorothy Pittman Hughes, Liddy Cotton Poggerbin, and others. I mean, it was revolutionary.
Truly. Owned, operated, written by women, for women, tackling subjects no one else would touch.
Domestic violence, discrimination, reproductive freedom. Head on. It was a lifeline for so many women.
It really became like a national talking circle in print, didn't it?
That's a perfect way to put it. It validated millions of experiences, showed there was this massive audience hungry for these ideas. It kind of institutionalized her mission.
Made her a public face, but still rooted in those grassroots conversations.
Always rooted. And crucially, she didn't just write about it. She actively partnered with Black feminists. She was constantly co-speaking with amazing activists like Dorothy Pittman Hughes and Florence Flo Kennedy in the early 70s.
That partnership seems so important. What did she learn from that collaboration?
It was like a real-world education in intersectionality way before that term was common.
Right. She saw it lived out.
Exactly. It hammered home that you just can't separate women's liberation from racial justice or class justice or anything else. Mm-hmm. And she learned from them not just strategy but style, presence. Flo Kennedy taught her how to handle hecklers with wit.
Ah, the famous Flo Kennedy lines.
Right, like the one about being asked if she was a lesbian. Flo's response, the question is not if I am a lesbian, but why you think that's an insult. Just brilliant.
Brilliant. And that cemented her commitment to building coalitions, being inclusive.
Absolutely. That shaped her whole approach from then on.
And that commitment carried through her later years, right? Decades more on the road, airports, campuses, campaigns, always connecting different struggles.
Always, embodying intersectionality. And the memoir also touches on personal things, like her surprising decision to marry David Bale at 66, challenging her own ideas about marriage.
And then his sad, untimely death only a few years later. It feels like the book itself, My Life on the Road, is kind of a final act of organizing, passing on the lessons.
I think so, too. And all these threads weave together into her core philosophy. It's really about radical empathy and interconnectedness.
Seeing how all forms of oppression, sexism, racism, classism are linked.
Exactly. They all spring from that same faulty hierarchical thinking, you know,
yeah.
Valuing one group over another. And her main tool, as we keep saying, was listening as a revolutionary act.
Not passive waiting, but active validation.
Active validation. Absorbing truth, moving people from shame to power, just like in those first talking circles she saw in India.
So what really drove her? It wasn't fame, clearly.
No, it seems to have been this deep, burning desire to correct injustice, sparked maybe by seeing her own mother's unlived life.
And fueled by just endless curiosity.
Yeah.
And listening to people's stories, finding that common ground.
Always finding the shared humanity. Her approach to conflict was also really interesting. Calm persistence. Strategic bridge building.
Not fiery arguments, but persuasion.
Right. She tried to find the grain of truth or pain in a heckler's anger, address that with empathy, with logic, disarm them by refusing to play their game, you know, elevate the conversation.
Like her response when the Equal Rights Amendment failed. Not despair, but just recommitment.
Exactly. Believing, as she famously said, that hope is a form of planning.
That's such a powerful idea. Okay, so let's bring this back to you, our listener. What can Gloria Steinem's life, her time on the road, teach us about our own lives, our own journeys?
Well, first, and maybe most importantly, in today's world, listening is a revolutionary act, truly.
In this noisy, polarized time, just deeply listening without judgment, it can change everything. She tells that story about the taxi driver, right?
Yeah. He recognizes her, starts ranting against feminism. Instead of fighting back, she just asks about his life, his family.
And by listening, she disarmed him, created a moment of connection.
A tiny space for dialogue. It shows how powerful just listening can be.
And tied to that, your story is your power. Sharing your experience isn't navel-gazing. It breaks isolation. It builds community.
Think back to that abortion speak out. Her personal secret became a collective tool for change once she shared it.
We can also learn that home can be found in purpose, not just place. Her life really shows that fulfillment doesn't always need a fixed address.
Right. Belonging can come from community, from doing work that matters to you.
And that leads to travel with an open heart. Whether you're literally traveling or just encountering new ideas, be open to being changed.
Be open to unexpected conversations. Gloria found the greatest insights often came from listening to people she just met, like in those Native American talking circles.
Another lesson, leadership is facilitation. It's not about having all the answers.
No, it's about creating the space for others to find their answers, trusting their wisdom.
Empowering them.
Exactly. And finally, maybe the hardest lesson sometimes.
Yeah.
Embrace the long game. Social change is slow. It's messy. There are setbacks.
Her life is a masterclass in persistence, isn't it? In holding on to hope, even when things look bleak.
Absolutely crucial. Hope as a form of planning.
Okay, let's distill this down. Here are three final takeaways from Gloria Steinem's journey for you.
All right. First, an emotional insight. Just imagine that feeling. That profound, almost physical relief someone feels when they are truly heard for the first time. That lightening of a burden, shame dissolving into solidarity. You see it in her descriptions of those talking circles. That emotional shift. That's the fuel.
That's powerful.
Second, an intellectual insight. It's about seeing intersectionality in practice before it was even really a widely used term. For her, it wasn't some theory she read about. It was what she saw every day on the road.
Through partnering with Black feminists, listening to Native leaders.
Exactly. She saw viscerally that you have to address all forms of oppression together because they're tangled up. Her life was the lived experience that underpinned the theory.
Makes sense. And the last one.
Third, a universal insight. The road isn't just for famous activists flying around the world. It's a metaphor, a mindset, available to absolutely everyone.
So how do you mean?
It means choosing curiosity over certainty. It means having that slightly uncomfortable conversation with someone who sees the world differently and actually listening. It means stepping outside your bubble. The road is just being open. Open to learning, open to being changed.
So what does all this mean for you listening right now? Gloria Steinem's journey, captured in My Life on the Road, really drives home that the most powerful tool we have for change, for connection, for a meaningful life, it's already inside us. It's our ability to listen.
It sounds simple, but it's profound.
It really is. So here's a thought for you this week. Find one chance to practice that radical listening. Ask someone a real question about their life, their perspective, and then just listen. No planning your reply, no judgment. Just listen. Maybe put down the phone, switch off the noise for a few minutes, connect with one person's story. Because like Gloria learned across millions of miles, every revolution, big or small, starts with a conversation.
And hold on to that idea. Hope is a form of planning. Keep engaging, keep listening with empathy. That's how change happens, inside and out.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into Gloria Steinem's incredible life and her enduring ideas. We hope it gave you something to think about on your own journey.
Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acontra Foundation.